It's a July 26, 1991, and we're in New York City. I have the pleasure of interviewing Tom Henrich. He used to play with the Yankees. And Tom, it's a pleasure to have you with you today. Thanks for the time.
Nice to be with you, Herb.
Tom, can you tell us a little bit about your early background, where you were raised, your family, and how you were first exposed to baseball as a kid?
Keep it as short as I can.
Feel free to elaborate as much as you'd like.
I'm from Massillon, Ohio. That's 50 miles south of Cleveland. It's known as a football town.
Paul Brown, sure.
I never played football. I could catch and throw and hit a little bit, as I recall, when I was six. I loved baseball, and baseball took off about the time I was 8 years old. I was born in 1913. Because of Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth hit New York City, and it grabbed all the headlines, and that's the fellow that I was in love with all of my youth. And I played a little baseball up until about the fourth grade in grade school, and softball took over. And the main reason for that was that you didn't need the space that you need for a baseball game. Anyway, I played that all the way through grade school and high school, and when I was 19, I was with the best softball team that I ever saw, as far as hitting was concerned. Mm-hmm. We were sluggers. We butchered everybody.
What was the name of that team?
The Huffman Drugs, Master of
Michael. Okay. Drugs in a pharmaceutical sense, I'm sure.
I think we played about 80 games, and we lost six. And played there 2 years.
What the position did you play?
Oh, I played basically outfield. Okay. And center and right. The reason I played right field is because that we got a better ball player than I was. He took over center field. Okay. He showed me to right field, and I pouted. Anyway, 2 years, and then the softball team broke up, and some guy said, "How'd you like to play baseball?" So that's 1933 that I played 1 year hardball, and two scouts came around, one from the Tigers, one from the Indians, and I liked the Indian organization better. I never rooted for the Indians. Uh-huh. All New York Yankees, all the way. But I went away. I played Class D in Manassas, Pennsylvania. 35, I played in Zanesville. 36, I played in New Orleans. Wrote to Judge Landis, became a free agent, and joined the New York Yankees in 1937.
Okay. How did your folks feel about your going into a baseball career?
Well, I'll tell you a cute story. My dad was a great baseball fan. He played. And he loved it that the four boys were out playing all day long.
So you have three brothers.
Yeah.
Right. And what level did he play at?
Oh, nothing. He was a plaster. Now here comes the story.
Okay.
My grandfather, German all the way, and Dad played baseball. He was a pitcher, and apparently he was pretty good. He was a great fan. And when I was going to go away in '34, Dad told my grandfather, he said, "Tom's going away to play professional baseball. And Grandpa Henry, he didn't know nothing about baseball. But he made the remark, I said, "Oh, is that so?" He says, "What is he, the striker?" To him, one guy hit it, one guy brought it back.
Right, right.
So that's well,
that was
background.
A cricket term, the striker? Or?
No, that's the German accent. That's hitting. Okay. He didn't know he was a batter.
Okay.
Striker, that's what he knew about it. Anyway, My dad was all in favor. He encouraged me all the way. Now, this is 1934. This is in the middle of the Depression. I had a job, of all things. I was making $22.50 a week.
Can you tell us what you were doing?
Yes, I was a file clerk in the Mechanical and Electrical Office of the Republic Steel.
Okay, but $22.50 was a decent...
That's more than nothing, and that's what a lot of parents forget.
Right, exactly.
And all things are relative. And when I was gone, then I got this contract to go and play in the spring of '34, and I asked the man who hired me, who was a good friend of my father's, that's about the only way to get a job. I said, "Mr. Donovan, if I don't make it down there in Zanesville, can I come back to my job?" He said, no way, Tom. We can't protect anybody." So my dad got in the act. My dad was a fine man. As a matter of fact, he was tremendous. Counsel, the best I ever got in my life. Anyway, he said, "Well, Tom," he says, "if you want to play ball, go on down there and play ball." He says, "And if And if this is the only job you can get, he says, you're not worth having this job. So go ahead. But I tell you, nothing to come home to. You bear down down there. And I was in love with it anyway.
Right, right.
If there was any talent in me, it was going to come up. And I stuck.
But considering the times, that was a pretty risky decision to make.
Yes, it was, in a sense.
Would you care to tell us how much, what was your original salary, the first salary in minor league?
I signed a contract for $100 a month with Zanesville. I went to spring training for Zanesville.
Okay.
1 week after the season started, I was the last guy of all the rookies that showed up in Zanesville. They started, Cleveland started a new farm called Monessen, Pennsylvania, Class D. That's the bottom of the barrel.
Right, right.
And my contract with Zanesville was $100. When I got over to Monessen, they said it is now $80. But I was a plutocrat. There were guys in that league, you asked Ian Slaughter, they played for $40 a month.
Wow.
Okay.
But that wasn't depression. Did that include meal money and...
Well, right? As I say, all things were relevant.
Right, right.
I stayed at the Grand Hotel in Monessen, Pennsylvania.
Sounds
look
depressing.
That up. $6 a week.
Wow. Wow.
So you could save a little money on $80 a
yeah,
month, which
yeah.
I did. Naturally, it wasn't in a month of a bag of beans. Start.
That first year in the minors, what was it like living with the guys? Is this your first time away from home?
Yeah.
Remember anything?
It's a great education.
Anything particular you like?
I came from a very moral upbringing. And when ball players get together, look out. I'm going to tell you something. When I went away, a nun, I used to go to Mass every morning. Walk, and so on. Good way to start the day. And the last week, this nun knew I was going to play ball. Where she learned this, I'll never know. But she says, Thomas, I want to tell you something. Now you're going away from home, and you're going to get down there, and you're going to run into some boys, and they're going to have ideas that you should not approve of, and they will try to take you out and visit some places. Imagine this.
Sounded like a pretty worldly nun.
The second night down there, some guy said, hey, there's a good, it's called a red light district.
Yeah, and you were how old at this time?
I'm 21.
Okay.
I'm 21. I've never been away from home.
Right.
The first thing I thought of was that nun. I said, how did she know this?
She was pretty worldly at
that's
her
right.
Right, right, yeah. What was it like on the field that first year?
We were really rookies. We played on a ball field. There wasn't a blade of grass on the whole field. That includes the outfield, which didn't make any difference as far as I was concerned. The way I always felt was I'm going to college. My college is baseball,
okay.
And they're paying me.
Okay.
So. Whatever happened down there, it was okay with me because I was having a pretty decent year.
Mm-hmm. Remember any of your stats about?
Well, I hit .320. I led the league in, I tied for home runs with 15. Uh-huh. We didn't play, I don't know, we played over 100 ball games.
Uh-huh.
But at any rate, I hit .320, and which was all right.
Sure. And, they've taken a lot of
it. So they sent me up to Zanesville the next year, and I stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
Went on.
Yeah. How many? What kind of attendance did they have in the class
B? They didn't have any money. I don't know what the heck they charged to get in. But
how many people come to see a typical game?
100.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, and I don't know what it cost them. I don't even know if they charged. I guess they charged something, but
right.
I don't know.
And what was the geographic area of the league there? As far as you're traveling to?
We were going a road trip. The furthest road trip was 32 miles.
Oh, okay.
And our expense money was 50 cents.
Okay.
And we didn't get that. The ball club went bankrupt in the middle of the year.
Uh-huh.
They were good people.
Uh-huh.
And the guy that signed me, Bill Bradley, used to be a good third baseman of the Indians. He pulled me aside. He says, Tom, you've been paid. I said, no. He said, don't worry, you'll get yours.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey, that's all right. So we got... I recall we must have made 28 road trips, and times 50 cents, that's $14. That's
right.
What we got.
I guess you always came back the same day.
Sure. And if you had a bad day and threw your wet uniform in a corner, that's where it was tomorrow, too.
Right. Any guys from that league you remember that also made it to the majors eventually?
Actually, I did see, I saw one guy, and I'm glad I saw him. His name was Gamble. Lee Gamble. He played a little bit with the Reds. Mm-hmm. He made the Cincinnati Red Ball Club the next year. He won in Class D,
wow.
And I remember him. He was a Taparitas hitter. He hit the ball on the ground he was a left-hander, and he was running when he's swinging, and he'd get some base hits, so he had a decent average. And he goes to the Reds, and I'll tell you, I said to myself, if that guy can get to the big league, so can I.
Yeah, right. They must have seen something in him anyway. What happened in your next couple of years in the minors?
Well, next year I went to Zanesville and played mm-hmm. there all year and hit 337.
Okay.
And they sent me to New Orleans. Remember the name Roy Weatherly? By any chance?
Yes, Cleveland. Okay. He plays with Cleveland, right, sure.
He got hurt. Broken ankle or something in New Orleans, and I finished the season after we couldn't win mm-hmm. in Zanesville.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me down there for 2 weeks, and then the next year I went back to New Orleans, and I played every second of every ball game
yeah.
in that humidity down there, and it hit 346.
Wow.
So,
what level was that now?
That's class, they called it A1. That's halfway between A and double A.
Okay, alright.
And then they sold me, and along with the pitcher, Ralph Wainwright, to Milwaukee, which was a farm club of the Indians,
uh-huh.
for $7,500.
Mm-hmm.
And then before spring training, that's when I wrote to Judge Linus and was declared a free agent.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I got with the Yanks.
Okay. How were you able to become a free agent? I don't know the laws of that time.
Roughly it amounts to, during the year,
yeah.
I read, and I'm from Massillon, we get the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Sporting News, and I read one place where Milwaukee can sell me to the Boston Braves, which was a bad ball club. And the Cleveland Indians are thinking putting me in a trade along with Joe Bosworth to the St. Louis Browns, which leads me to say, who do I belong to?
Uh-huh.
I belong to Milwaukee or Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
I want to find out. Uh-huh. How are you going to find out? I told my father, I says, I'm thinking of writing a letter to Judge Landis. He said, why? I told him, he says, that's a good idea. But basically, I said, because Landis is on the side of the ball player.
Uh-huh.
He's the only guy we had. Right. Certainly wasn't the owners. So I wrote to the judge, and as technical as I can be, he said, Cleveland was instrumental in directing my progress in the baseball in the organization without having any claim to me. I was uh-huh. on their books as them owning me.
Uh-huh.
That happened hundreds of times
right.
under Ricky.
Right.
But I'm the only guy that wrote to the judge uh-huh. and he jumped on my side.
Well, I guess his legal background was beneficial to you at that time. During your minor league career, were there any particular coaches or managers that had to stand out?
Number one, Larry Gilbert, manager at the New Orleans.
Okay, can you tell us in what way?
Well, he was so sound. Larry had played with the Boston Braves in the miracle year, 1914,
mm-hmm.
when the Braves came from last place to win the pennant.
They were last July 4th.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
He wasn't even a regular.
Uh-huh.
But he was a good ball player,
mm-hmm.
and a very fine man, very fine man, mm-hmm. like a father to me.
Uh-huh.
And I like Larry, too. Larry and Joe McCarthy stand out, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
So, great, great managers because they understood people,
uh-huh.
and they could be like a father, and boy, they could be like a Simon of Greek to
mm-hmm.
you too.
Mm-hmm.
If it called for it.
Right.
I remember Larry one time. I got a guy on third base two times with one man out and didn't get him in, and I had broken my good ball bat, and the only one I could find was a black one with a gray handle. Uh-huh. With a great cork handle,
mm-hmm.
and after the second one, I got back to the dugout. Larry Gilbert was tramping on it. He broke the thing right in two. He says, "Get rid of that drugstore model and get a ball back."
Uh-huh.
So this is, and I did. That's a sample.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned him in connection with being a human being rather than the technical aspects
of
baseball.
That's right. You want technical, Gene Mock.
No, I mean, I know. I thought it's interesting that you picked him out because that was more important to you.
Absolutely.
As a human being, rather than a technical
right,
aspect.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you played in the minor leagues for how many years now?
3 years.
Okay. Could you tell us, I'm sure you remember the day when you were told you were going up to the big leagues?
Well, I joined the Yankees opening day 37. 2 weeks later, I haven't been in a ballgame.
Well, how were you told that you were going to be up for the Yankees?
Oh, well, I signed a contract in Massillon with the New York Yankees.
Oh, you signed directly with the Yankees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. And I joined the Yankees on opening day, 37, and 2 weeks later, I hadn't been in a ballgame, and McCarty's going to send me over to Newark. Where, you know what Newark was like in 37?
Newark was a pretty good team.
I can, in 2 minutes, I can name 16 guys on the Newark ball club who went to the big leagues.
Well, just for the record, want to mention some of them for our recording?
Joe Gordon, second base, Babe Dahlgren, first base, Nolan Richardson, shortstop, Pinky May, third base, Charlie Keller, Jimmy Gleason, Johnny Seeds, Bobby Seeds, two catchers, Hershberger and Buddy Rosar,
okay.
Spud Chandler, Marius Russo, Atlee Donald, Red Branch,
a mild understatement, a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And
George McQuinn, he was
a good first baseman,
yeah.
Right? He played with the Browns, I think, too.
Yeah.
Right. How about who were on the Yankees in 1937?
DiMaggio, Jake Powell, Merle Hogue, George Selkirk, and Roy Johnson in the outfield, Bill Dickey, Joe Glenn, Arndt Jorgens were the catchers. Red Rolfe third, Grassetti second, Tony Lazares last year, second base, Lou Gehrig on first base, Ruffing, Gomez, Pearson, Hadley, Murphy, that's the big five.
Pretty decent team.
What a bunch of pros.
What was it like the first day you reported to the Yankees? I mean, how were you treated coming right from the minors?
You know these little stories about the boy, when a rookie used to play,
yeah, right,
and they wouldn't
right,
let him
right,
go to
right,
home
right.
plate, that's a bunch of hooey.
Right, right.
They were a bunch of gentlemen.
Right.
I remember shaking hands with Lou Gehrig, and he welcomed me just as warmly as possible. Nice to meet you, Tom. They shook hands. That's all there was to it.
Right.
It was class.
How about the DiMaggio? He's sort of noted as a quiet
guy. Well, he certainly is.
Yeah, right.
Sure,
yeah,
shake
right.
hands.
Right, right. Okay, so you were waiting for 2 weeks.
He shipped me over to Newark. I got over there. I was there 10 days. We played 7 games. I hit 444. Every ball I hit found a hole someplace.
Uh-huh.
And McCarthy got mad at Roy Johnson and let him go. And he called up, told that Barrow, says, get me that kid from Newark. And it was me.
Uh-huh.
That's how I got back.
Okay.
So I joined him in Chicago.
What was your first game like?
First game,
yeah.
First time up.
Sure, go ahead, tell us about it.
Brick Owens was the umpire. Ball one.
Who are you playing against?
White Sox.
Who was pitching against you?
I'm not sure. I don't believe it was Monty Stratton. He was their ace at the time. Still making a difference
right.
from what happened. As I remember, ball one, ball two, and I look down the third. I hope I'm hitting,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not. I'm taking.
Okay. Nobody on base?
I said, come on. This is how I make a living. So you take.
Right.
Fastball down the middle, strike one. Right. Next pitch, curveball, foul ball, strike two. Next pitch, curveball, low inside, ball three.
3-2.
Wrong. Strike three, you're out.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, it was not a strike. But what do? You turn around. I don't know whether he's smiling, and I didn't smile, but I sure didn't give him any bad looks. But to this day, I said, no way, man.
Well, particularly as a rookie, I guess.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, right, right, right. And what happened the rest of the game?
We lost. I got a base hit. I doubled
do?
In about the third time up. I doubled the left field and my first base hit. Anyway.
Now, you were playing a right field?
I was playing left field.
You were playing left
things.
Field?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was a stranger.
Sure, DiMaggio was in center.
Yes.
And then couldn't pull it out there. And the right field?
Selkirk,
right.
Right.
Yeah, right. So how did that first season go?
I hit 320, but I tore cartilage in Chicago in late July, it seemed like that, and that kind of stopped me for the rest. I was operated on in October in 37, but I was used a pinch hitter once in a while. I couldn't run too well.
Mm-hmm. And where did the Yankees end up that year?
They won by I don't know how many.
Well, just hearing the lineup, we expected to get that right.
That's right.
Right. And did you play in the series?
They beat the Giants 4 out of 5.
Did you get into the series?
No.
Okay, you were...
I wasn't needed.
Right, okay. When I think Tommy Henrich, I think of the old reliable. How did that come about?
Oh, that happened after the war. We're playing a game in Philadelphia. The Yankees had traded Buddy Rosar to Philadelphia. We got a catcher, Ken Silvestri.
Yep.
It's the ninth inning. We're ahead by a run. 2 strikes on Buddy Rosar, hits a foul pop fly, and the ball came down, and Silvestri barely touched the ball. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Next pitch, he hit it in seats. Uh-huh. Tie ball game. And in Philadelphia, you know the old jokes about nobody wants a second first prize.
First prize is 1 week in Philadelphia, and second prize is 2 weeks in Philadelphia, right?
I guess Russ Hodges and Mel Allen wanted to get out of Philadelphia, and they knew the train schedule. And they figured, there goes the train. In the 10th inning, Rizzuto got on, got a single, and I put the hit and run on, hit in the left field corner, and Rizzuto scored. Bing, bang. So we're ahead, and Russ Hodges, I think it was Russ Hodges, old reliable, I think, what do you think, we're going to make the dream. And from there on, they started using that.
That really stuck.
Yeah.
Now, you started in 37, and you eventually ended up in right field. When was that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would say when George was finished, George Selkirk was, he was going downhill a little bit, and I was maturing a little bit, and then I took over right field.
Okay.
I wasn't going to take over left field because Keller came on 39.
That's right. I remember that after.
Oh.
It was pretty decent.
That was beautiful.
Now, when you played up until, I guess, World War II.
50. Well,
I mean, now you
went away August 31st, 1942.
Okay.
And they won the pennant there, and they got beat by the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
That year.
Right.
That's the only blemish on DiMaggio's tremendous career. The only time he ever got beat. He would have been 10 for 10 with that one.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't there, so I don't count.
Right.
And I ended up 8 for 8.
8 for 8. Not
and nobody can go as high as 8 without losing.
Without losing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really great.
Yeah, it's a darn good feeling. I never had to go over and congratulate those guys.
Any comments about your military service?
None.
Okay. Did you?
I fought the Battle of the Sioux, St. Marie, Michigan, in the Coast Guard.
I see. You played on the ball team there.
I never asked to be traded either, or transferred.
That was a good league for you at the time. Right. You played on the ball team, et cetera, I'm sure. How was it coming back? Was it difficult coming back?
Tough.
Yeah.
Very tough. No one Yankee. Keller had a decent year. He doesn't think he had a good year, but it wasn't bad. But it wasn't what he'd been up to. And DiMaggio wasn't up to it either. In other words, and plus the Red Sox. The Red Sox got off and they just kept winning. And after a month or two, no contest. That's all there was to it.
Yeah.
And McCarthy and McPhail, this hurt all over. McCarthy and McPhail didn't get along. McPhail is the new owner
or partner with Dale Webb.
And Toppy. They didn't hit it off, and McCarthy left. I don't know whether to say he was fired or whether McCarthy says I'm leaving. I don't know what it was, but that hurt. It shouldn't have happened.
Now, you had mentioned before that McCarthy was one of the managers who impressed you the most.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about why.
Well, there's so many things to say.
You can think of any particular story or incident that would illustrate.
I got a book full of them. But the type of guy he was, it was all business, and I would say this, he understood. I don't know where he got his psychology from, but it was beautiful. When you were having trouble, he wouldn't ride you, he wouldn't get on you. He tried to help you. And when you're going great, and you do one simple, you lax a little bit in your effort, and he knows it. Boy, he'd jump.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In other words, he wants you put out there at your best.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say when you needed a friend, you had one. when you needed a boss, you had one.
So he knew when to get on you and when to lay off you.
That's right.
Right. And that was more impressive to you than the tactical...
I'll give you a little secret here. McCarthy's gone, and I don't think Ted Williams minds anymore. But Williams manages the Senators.
Right, in Washington Senators.
Okay. Joe McCarthy told me on his back porch that Ted Williams called him 3 times during the year to ask a question. Do you do this? And if so, why? And that's why I say McCarthy's the best. McCarthy knew the answer to everything in baseball.
So, in other words, not only from the personal point of view, but from the tactical point of view, too.
That's right.
Right, right. Now, how would you describe yourself as a hitter? Any particular kind of pitchers you like to face, or any kind of pitchers? Or
what was your approach? I would categorize myself as a good fastball. Mm-hmm. If you throw the ball at your fastest, what I mean by that is I can tell from the way you're winding up whether you're going to put everything behind it. And if you do, I can gear myself that I can match your speed. Mm-hmm. I get ready and I'm ready. But when you fool around with the speeds, my eyes weren't good enough to notice the difference. Mm-hmm. And Warren Spahn says, all you got to do to be a good pitcher is throw the batter off stride, meaning when he swings the bat, it's not his best.
Right.
And that's the way I hit curveballs and changeups. Mm-hmm. Until I smarten up with 2 strikes and forget power, just guard the plate.
Right.
And if I were playing ball today, I would guard the plate on every pitch because pitchers don't give in as much anymore, and they're throwing that blooming slider, which is legitimate, and then they're throwing the whatever that fork thing is. They're throwing it. So, in other words, you don't know where it's going.
Right,
so the best thing you can do is gear yourself to hit the ball where you can hit it, and there are not very many. Wade Boggs will hit that outside pitch.
Right.
He'll hammer that thing to left field.
Right.
He's all geared for that.
Right. Tony Gwynn.
I guess so. Haven't seen. So. Yeah.
So you were primarily a puller.
I am a pull hitter.
Right. Well, I guess a lot of guys were like that too. Which kind of pitches gave you the most difficulty? Who would you say are 2 or 3 of the toughest pitchers?
I'd throw curveball in there. Number one was Tommy Bridges. He's a curveball.
Detroit, I think.
Just exploded. Absolutely exploded.
Curveball.
Ted Lyons recognized me in a hurry. He was great. I'll tell you this. Lyons, all his career was with the White Sox.
Right.
And you know they never were very
good. Yeah, but he's still a great pitcher.
Well, a sports writer asked McCarthy, how many ball games do you think Ted Lyons would have won with a first division ball club? McCarthy thought about 4 or 5 seconds. He says, about 400.
Really?
Is that a compliment?
Well, he came close to 300.
He recognized me in a hurry. You ain't going to get a fastball. So, knuckleballs. Another guy later on gave me a lot of trouble was Ellis Kinder. Because I couldn't figure out his speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And deceived my eye. And that's all you need. Just get
the Senators had a lot of knuckleballers.
One time they had 4 of them.
Yeah,
you faced 4 of them. How'd you like to be that catcher?
Rick
Farrell.
He
earned it into the Hall of Fame.
Right, that's for sure. Who would you say are 2 or 3 of the greatest hitters you ever saw? Either on your own team or...
I'll take Ted Williams. From the standpoint of just hitting, there's no contest on that.
Mm-hmm.
Most dangerous hitter by far is Joe DiMaggio.
Mm-hmm.
And another dangerous hitter is Yogi Berra.
Because
his philosophy was to throw the ball. If I like it, I'll hit it.
Mm-hmm.
No thinking. You didn't have to throw the ball.
Yeah.
So he's in there.
Yogi's
Charlie Gehringer was a beautiful hitter.
Oh, yeah.
For this reason. He never swung the ball bat without making it look like he got the ball he was looking for. Now, that's a great hitter, isn't it?
In other words, even if the ball was out of the strike zone.
No, he didn't chase it out of the strike zone.
Right.
What I mean, whether you're fastballing or whether you're curving, he looked like, in other words, he had a good swing every time he went out. You never saw him have a weak swing at the ball.
Right.
And a guy that went through not being able to do that could certainly feel very jealous of his talent compared to your own.
What about the defensive ball players? Any stand out particularly?
I think Jimmy Pearsall was a good center field. I would put Dominic DiMaggio ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic DiMaggio, I think, was the best center fielder. You'd start with Joe, but he hurt his arm early enough. Don't forget.
Right. Yeah.
And Dominic was a very sound guy. And oh man, I gave him a compliment one time. He listened to this, and I said, "We're talking about defensive outfielders throwing and so forth." I says, "I'll give you an example." I says, "Dominic there.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic didn't lead the league in assists." And he kind of looked at me. I says, "And I'll tell you why. Because they wouldn't run on him. And I'm one of them. I'll tell you, I found out in a hurry. That the point is, I got a fetish on this.
Yeah.
Outfielders don't know that they get beat on throwing a guy out because they held the ball a fraction of a second. You do your homework ahead of time, and Dominic would come up firing. He was saving time all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I practiced that by the hour, how to catch and throw in a hurry without a hippity hop out there, you know.
Right.
Wind up and throw. Man, that's too much time. The batter got 18 feet on you while you were hopping.
Right. How about defensive infielders? Any particular one stand out?
I saw Marty Merriman when he had a Cardinals reputation. I didn't understand why, but I saw him make in spring training. He went into the hole, and the way he set himself and made a good throw to first base, I says, "Hey, that's a good play." Then later on, it was a one high hopper over the run. He came in and he scooped the thing up, and on the run, fired it underhand. He got him again. I says, "Well, now I can see why you thought it would be pretty
right.
good." Joe Kuhl was a good first baseman. George McQuinn. I was probably forgetting some guys. Joe Gordon, my second baseman, I'll tell you that. And I think I got to go either with Greg Nettles or Brooks Robinson for third base.
Right.
Now the guys will say, "Well, what's the matter with Mike Schmidt?" I says, "I wasn't around for Mike Schmidt." I don't,
right.
And when you're talking about third baseman, I think you're talking about defense.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's why I picked those two.
Right. I think I heard Ted Williams once say that if the Red Sox had Phil Rizzuto, that would have made the difference.
Oh, yeah.
In beating
yeah.
you guys.
See, Pesky was pretty good up
yeah,
there,
yeah.
but I don't think Pesky was as good as Phil
right,
on defense.
Right. Now, you've had I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, you've had, you know, really a long and a terrific career. Would it be fair to ask you if you remember any particular instance that you would say was your greatest thrill?
Luckily, I got a lot of great thrills.
Okay.
41 World Series, winning that one against DeRozier-led ball club. That's a thrill. 49 was a miracle year for us.
Were you at that when Mickey Owen dropped the...
Yeah, isn't that something?
Okay. do you remember your thoughts at the time? You know, you were at that.
Well,
and
that was a...
Yeah.
I'm guarding the plate at 3-2, and in comes this... turns out to be a curveball, and so I'm ready to swing, but as I start to swing, the darn thing broke so sharply and low, I'm trying to hold my ball bat up, because I know it's bad, but I can't. I've committed myself.
Right.
And at the same time, right after that, I say, "Wait a minute. He fooled me so doggone much. Maybe he's fooling Mickey." And I turn around. You see the picture. You see me turn around right away, and there's that ball, and bongo, I'm on my way right now.
Some people said it might have been a spitter.
I mean, well, the people that weren't there say it was a spitter, including Dan Daniel, a writer. Okay, they know everything.
Right.
But the guy that called for the pitch and the guy that tried to catch it is Mickey Owen, and he and I agree 100%. It was the best curve Hugh Casey ever threw.
Ball. Right.
Yeah.
At that time, did you more or less feel the game was over?
No way.
Okay.
No. How can you say a game's over?
Right.
The man on the first
base. Yankees weren't like that.
No way. Oh.
So the 41 series, what else? Is there any particular game from your personal standpoint that you think of today?
Well, sure or what the heck. I remember the first hit I think I got off of Johnny Allen, who McCarthy had traded for Monty Pearson. Uh-huh. McCarthy couldn't sign Johnny Allen.
Uh-huh.
Johnny Allen could pitch.
Uh-huh.
My first year, he was 16-1.
Wow.
He got beat on the last day of the season, 1-0 in Cleveland. Man, he could throw that ball. He was mean. He knocked Gehrig down. Did you know that?
No.
Allen didn't, and Gehrig didn't get along because Allen didn't like McCarthy and Gehrig loved McCarthy.
Uh-huh.
And I guess they weren't good friends. When Allen would face Gehrig, he really roughed him up.
That probably didn't happen too much with Gehrig, did it? The guys,
well,
I mean, guys
he,
throwing
now,
him?
Wait a minute. He didn't knock him down. He came close to
brushed
him.
Brushed him back.
Oh, yeah, he brushed him back real good. Gary would just stand there, and he said, sooner or later, you got to throw the ball over the plate. And when you throw over the plate, Gary would hammer him.
Right.
So when I got a hit off of Allen, we got 4 runs in the 9th inning. I was so happy. I mean, because we beat Cleveland, okay?
Right.
I'm bouncing around the clubhouse. It was a doubleheader. And Gary's sitting over on the stool about 4 seats away from me, and I'm making noise. I said, boy, oh boy, I feel so doggone good about beating that guy. I'm the happiest guy in this clubhouse. And Gehrig says, hey, Tom, come over here. And I went over. He says, you're not the happiest guy in this clubhouse. He says, I am. He wasn't showing it, but he was very happy also.
I can imagine that.
That was a...
What kind of guy was Gehrig? I mean,
live and let live.
Uh-huh. He sort of kept to himself, but...
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. He was 100% the opposite of Ruth.
Yeah, right.
But and what a butcher boy he was at home plate.
Yeah.
Gee! He didn't care which way the ball went. Yeah. He's like a Joe Medwick and Yogi. They didn't
wait for the ball to come into the strike
zone.
Oh,
no. That's right. Gary could hit him high and low. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tomahawk. All over the place.
You must have seen him when he, at the end of his career, when he developed
at 38, he had a pretty darn good year.
Yeah.
And then by spring training,
mm-hmm.
over the winter is when this hit him. There was not one sign of that in 38.
Right.
What we saw in spring training opened our eyes. What is wrong?
Yeah.
They don't even know what disease he has.
Right.
But we know there was something has really slowed him down,
mm-hmm.
and he never came out of it in spring training. Well, it was bad enough, you know, he played about 8 ball games, took himself out.
Yeah, I know, he only played about a month or so, and he was a well-liked guy. That must have been pretty shocking to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thinking back, on your career. I remember there was a game in the World Series. You were against Don Newcombe and the Dodgers.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was the first game.
It was a scoreless game for...
Nothing. Don had pitched a 4-hitter up to then, and Allie Reynolds had given them only 2 hits.
Right.
And here we go. You got behind 2-0, right? And I'm looking for a ball, and he hadn't walked anybody all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this will be a strike.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
So you
the
were,
odds are, this
right,
will be a strike.
Right, 2-0, he's going to come in there.
So
right.
I'm ready.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
And
he said it was a curve, but he didn't have a good curve. And it wasn't the best ball I ever hit, but it was hit pretty darn good.
Right.
And it was not the perfect line drive to right field, but there was plenty on it enough to carry it. And I recall vividly, I'm going down to first. I don't know whether it's in the seats or not. And as I'm running, I'm watching Carl Furillo. And boy, in a second or two, up goes his head.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's all. In other words, his head was following the ball, and it was up in the seats.
That's
it.
That was a thrill.
That's pretty high.
To put it mildly. How would you compare those Brooklyn Dodger teams with... teams you played against in the American League?
Well, they were always, telling you, that was the pride that was there between the Yankees and Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the pride in Giants and Dodgers was higher, I don't know, but it would have hurt me all over to get beat by Brooklyn.
I know.
Because of those Brooklyn, by the way, they were wonderful fans.
I know.
Boy, they were great fans.
I know, I was one of them.
Well, as I say, they hated our guts, but they weren't dirty about it.
Yeah.
They would nick you, not like a New Yorker, you know, they could they could really give you a good barb, and you'd hear them.
What was your last year?
50.
Okay, 50. So, okay, you were there when Robinson came along. And
oh, yeah, he came up in 47.
Just on a little more serious note, if you could tell us a little bit about what were the feelings about blacks breaking into ball? You guys talking about it much?
We didn't know. I don't think we said one word about it.
Mm-hmm.
You mean the racial issue?
Yeah, yeah.
No, we didn't bother with that. Mm-hmm. I think our guys were saying, well, it's inevitable. Here we go.
Okay.
We didn't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what kind of a guy it was. Robinson, he's a tough
son. Who was the first black guy in the Yankees, I forgot? Well, I don't know if you were around.
Elston Howard.
Right. Were you still
a real gentleman,
a wonderful guy. Yeah, he was a gentleman.
When they took on the first one, they took on a nice one.
Yeah, I think they looked carefully. Were you on the team at the time?
No.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. All careers have to come to an end.
Yeah.
I guess as yours did. How did that take place? Was it a gradual thing or?
It was my body. I was on the books at 35, but I was actually 38, and I knew my knees bothered me again, and I need another operation. And I said, for what?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, what are the odds on this darn thing? Nobody guaranteed it's going to be any better than the first one.
Right.
I had trouble with my left knee. It was never as good. Before I heard it the first time, it was never as good anymore.
Right.
I got by, and playing first base was a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
I even argued with the doctor on that. I says, "Yeah, I'm belong with that." I says, "You make tougher moves on your legs in the outfield than you do at first base."
Sure.
He didn't understand that. Here.
Uh-huh.
I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I'd had it, so I says, "Now's the time to get out of here."
Okay.
Which was not, that wasn't hard.
Okay, you saw it coming, you felt
gratified
about your career. A lot of stories are told about Yogi Berra, half of which they claim probably aren't true, but probably some of them are. Is there any particular thing you remember, incident with Yogi that?
Well, there's so many of them.
Pick out one.
Yogi, I'll pick this one up.
Okay.
Because many things that Yogi said are so true.
Uh-huh.
In essence, they're true.
Okay.
But the way they come out of his mouth, he said, what kind of thing? For instance, it ain't over till it's over.
Right.
And that is so darn true, right?
Right, right.
If not, ask Hugh Casey and Mickey Owen.
good comparison.
But what was I going to say here now? He's playing left field.
Right.
In the World Series.
Right.
And I played in one ball game, 47. Bucky Harris didn't want Yogi to catch because he couldn't throw as well as Aaron Robinson. They were running on Yogi.
Okay.
You know,
I remember that.
What's his name? Giancarlo stole second base.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The last game, Bucky had a meeting and says, Yogi, I don't want you to catch, but I want you in the ball game. He says, you go to right field. And he says to me, Tom, you can play left field, can't you? I said, sure.
Okay.
I haven't been there in years.
Right, in the minor, yeah, when you first
when
came
when
out.
When this meeting was over, I said, where's my ball glove? I'm going to left field. Because I'd heard about that. But it was
a tough sun field, I think.
It's
in the
combination
fall,
of the
yeah.
sun and there's a atmosphere at home plate, maybe smoke or whatever.
Okay.
And you might get fooled.
Mm-hmm.
You might get fooled out there. All it takes is a second. But knowing this, I went out there. Okay, I got by. But Yogi was asked, what's tough about playing left field in October? He says, it gets late early out there. Well, that's exactly what happens. You see what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good one.
you couldn't write it any better than that.
Right, that's good. As we said, Joe DiMaggio is sort of a private guy. Is there any particular incident you remember about Joe that you can tell?
Joe, my God, he was a darn perfect. I look up to Joe more than for anything else. Joe is the best winner I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
the rest of it, his hitting, all that stuff. A lot of guys could do that. But his determination to be the winner, somewhere or another, you never saw anything cheap about DiMaggio at any time at the plate. Mm-hmm. He was a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that attribute, you might say, personifies the guy to me as far as his approach to a ball game. Tough.
I think came off the injured list once toward the end of the year or something. His first, was that against the Red Sox
That's
series?
That's 49.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
And what happened then?
Crosby, 4 home runs in 3 games up there.
Right.
Very instrumental. We were in first place, you know.
Yeah.
We were in first place the whole season until the last game of the year. Right. Last Monday of the year.
Right.
Red Sox won that game. So that was a team effort. Everybody played a good part. We got up and running.
So he was sort of the team leader.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, right. He never made a speech in his life.
Right.
Still, he's a team leader. I always felt a guy say, do you fear anybody when you go out on the ball field? I says, no, I don't fear him. I got respect for him, but I don't fear him. He says, why? I says, we're starting with Joe in center field. Who you got?
Uh-huh. When you left the game, what did you find that you missed most about, and what did you miss least?
Oh, I was ready to quit. I didn't miss anything.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, if it would be anything, it would be association with the guys.
Uh-huh.
Because I've been married 50 years, and my wife was not a baseball fan.
Uh-huh.
And she's been a perfect... perfect guy for me for 50 years.
Uh-huh.
But when you get her on the baseball, she said, don't you ever get tired of talking baseball? I said, nope. Uh-huh. So that's the part of the likes of coming back for old timers game. That's, to me, that means something. The fun, all the good times.
So
you
see
had,
the guys and the memories simple. And things like that.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. How were the Yankees as a, off the field?
Well, we had, Murphy was always with Selkirk, Dickey was always with Gary,
mm-hmm.
Gomez was with DiMaggio, and I saw a lot of Spud Chandler, I saw a lot of Gordon, as I say, I had more laughs with that guy.
Joker?
Oh.
Is he a practical joker or just not?
He was, sure he's a practical joker, but he laughed about the thing, and at the same time, McCarthy loved him, see? Because mm-hmm. Gordon, on that ball field, he was another winner.
Yeah.
He wasn't the best hitter,
right.
But by George, in the clutch, when it meant something,
right.
He's not going to fold. So, but off the field, we were a pretty happy bunch.
Right. You played some first base, particularly for the end of your career. How would you compare outfield and first base as, what you like and why?
I love playing right field because a right fielder's got a lot more to do out there than a lot of people can imagine. And I go through a lot of different thoughts. Who came up? What's going on here? Where are you going to play? What do you think he's going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And watch him like a hawk. And for instance, if you suspect he's going to hit and run and you get prepared to cheat on him, it's not going to be a long ball, mm-hmm. So you're ready to charge in on a thing. All those kind of things. And making the right throws, I enjoyed that.
Uh-huh.
First base, 90% of the time, is you go to first base and catch the ball.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Then it's over.
Right. So you like the thinking part. That was
I like right field, yeah. I studied all the fences and all the angles and so forth, I got a kick out of it.
Uh-huh.
Being able to take advantage of what you knew.
How would you, do you ever watch games or go to games today?
Not a whole lot.
Okay.
You know?
How would you compare the game today as when you played?
The feeling I have is that the sportsmanship that existed between player and fan is deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider that in the minds of so many ball players, they can't wait till they're a free agent so that they can negotiate and make more money and switch ball clubs. Now I say to myself, if that's what you got in mind, I'm not going out and root for you. Mm-hmm. There's no affection, at least for me, and I hear this from people who send me for autographs, about the wonderful feeling that they had following the Yanks in the 40s and so forth. And that's the feeling I have. These are a bunch of individuals out here.
Mm-hmm.
And more power to them for taking the money which exists.
Right.
Who's against somebody making money?
Right.
That's great.
Right.
But as far as me rooting for you just to make money, I ain't going to root for you to make money. I'd like to root for you if you can get out there and win for the team that I'm rooting for, but I don't think it exists.
Mm-hmm. Any particular players you like to watch today?
I don't get to see them.
Do you have any sons who were with baseball?
No, wait. I got two sons, and they played a little bit. But
I never encouraged them.
My dad never encouraged me. If they want to play, go ahead. They never cared a whole lot about it.
Just for the record, what was your last major league salary?
What are you asking that for?
Well, don't have to ask. Rather not answer that?
Yeah.
Okay. Looking back, if you had to do it all over again, is there anything you would do differently?
Yeah. I would, from day one, I would choke the bat a little bit and hit as though I had two strikes on me when I went up there. There are a lot of cheap swings that I went through, and I'm going to hit the ball hard someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just making contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I would be doing that today.
Right.
I would not be definitely a pull hitter today.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had done that from the start, just guarding the plate, because I found out that you don't need a great big swing to hit a home run.
Right.
I guarding the plate in Fenway Park, I'll give you a name, maybe you'll remember. Fritz Ostermueller.
Yep.
Remember him?
He's a pitcher. Right?
He's a cagey left-hander.
Yeah,
in Fenway Park before they put the bullpen in right field.
Okay.
Now the stands out there is over 400 feet.
Right.
Merle Hogue got hurt. He's out of the ball game. They put me in against a left-hander. And I'm guarding the plate with Red on first base, Red Raw. And guarding the plate, I gave it the short stroke and I hit a line drive to right field. And I says it may be in there for two. And I'm running, the ball went in the seats. Which should have opened my eyes. You follow what
I'm
saying?
And that was before the real lively ball, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. The lively ball came in with Ruth.
Oh, okay.
They changed the ball for Ruth. The point I'm making is that when you have you don't need the great big windup to hit a long ball.
Mm-hmm.
DiMaggio didn't take a long stride.
Right.
And this ball just jumped right out of there. And I hit several home runs after that. Mm-hmm. Choke ball bat against curveballs. Just guard the plate if you get up in the air. And she goes.
And nobody ever tried to tell you about that? I mean, as long as you were performing.
That's right.
Right. They didn't really look into that.
That's
something you would have had to figure out.
I don't know what would have happened, but it's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm. How many home runs did you actually have?
183.
That's not bad.
Naturally, many, many, many times I got up there. That's why I say we were a ball club.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sacrifice myself many times to get the big guy up there and in a better circumstance and move the runner around. And,
I remember reading recently a story where DiMaggio was in the middle of his hitting streak and you went back to McCarthy.
Yeah, I feared.
About that? Right.
The strange thing
this
about
this was late in the game, right?
Oh, it was 8th inning, yeah.
Right.
We're ahead
4-2. He had about 40 games or something.
30, he was up to 37, this is the 38th.
Right.
And the pitcher is a guy that I own, Eldon Auker. Every ball
player's
got one.
Submarine pitcher,
yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah. I could see that pitch. Man, I really murdered him.
Uh-huh.
I'm not bragging, it's a fact.
Yeah, right.
I can tell you dozens of guys that own me, okay?
Okay.
And anybody can hit a line drive, right?
Right.
I could hit a line drive into a double play.
Right.
And I felt, wouldn't that be a way to stop this thing if somebody gets on? Johnny Sturm is out. Red Rolf's the batter. I think he got a walk. Mm-hmm. And before he went up there, before he got the walk, I went to McCarty and says, if Red gets on first base, is it all right if I bunt? And McCarty thought for about 3 seconds, but we don't play ball that way.
Right.
You don't bunt with a man on first and one out.
And what was the score then?
4-2. We're ahead.
You're ahead. Okay.
McCarty says that'll be all right.
Because if Joe hadn't gotten hit yet.
That's the idea.
Right.
Stay out of the double play. And right. I also was banking on the fact Auker is a classy guy. And I know that.
Uh-huh.
He's not going to take the cheap way out on Joe.
Okay.
He's going to pitch to him.
He's going to pitch to him. Okay.
He's going to try to get him out.
Right.
But he's not going to throw four balls outside to stop him.
Right.
I think it is the first or second pitch demands hit a screaming line right left center field.
But it was your idea.
Well,
that was great.
At least I made sure that he got up there.
That was great. You gave him a shot. Anything else besides a change in hitting that you would have done differently looking back on the whole thing?
I wouldn't have got hurt.
Well, you didn't do that by choice.
that about wraps up.
But essentially, if you... You would
I couldn't have changed.
Same
a lot of it satisfies me 100%.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my life satisfies me.
Right.
I've got no complaints against anything.
This is up to you. Would you care to tell us a little bit about what you've done since you...
I haven't done anything worthwhile. Okay?
Well, okay.
I'm not going to shake the world up with what I've done.
No, I just thought of the general electricity.
I've made a living.
Okay.
Everything is fine. I'm still healthy. And with all what I've seen, I'm 78 now, and I see what happens to people and so forth, and I tell a lot of people, I say, I just pray to the Lord, you want to give me broken bones and all that stuff, that's okay. Leave my stomach alone.
Uh-huh. Well, I have to say honestly with that, that you look good, you seem happy with yourself.
That's
and,
right.
You know, that's important. I'm sure you still get the recognition and mail and are invited to these shows and... That must be very gratifying, aside from the money. I mean, the emotional aspect of
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
I enjoy people.
That's great. And, you know, that really comes out, I can tell you that. Tom, it's really been a pleasure. And once again, I really want to thank you for giving us the time.
Okay,
really appreciate it.
Very good.